Welcome to Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I am Pamela Spoto, poet and host.
In my heart, in my brain, on my tongue, behind my teeth. Behind my eyes, on my tongue, under my skin, in my heart. In my veins, under my skin, behind my teeth, on my tongue, on my tongue.
We are broadcasting from KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain. We will host a monthly poetry show the very last Saturday of the month at 10 p.m. So here we go. Well, hello. I'm so glad you're in the studio with us today. And as con artiste, and I'm just delighted that you're here.
Thank you.
So welcome. And of course, this is Late Night Poetry Jam. I just want to remind the audience. And I'd like to tell you just a few words about con artiste, and then we'll talk, and we'll do some poetry and spoken word, and we'll talk some more. And I'm very happy that
Thank you. You're here. Me too.
So con artiste is a spoken word recording artist and performer. She enjoys doing video and audio work. She writes books, records musicians, makes videos for YouTube, and performs spoken word. She works exclusively on her own, piecing together videos and mastering audio on her home computer. And you can check out her webpage, which we will remind you later, conartiste.com.
Yes.
So, I know that being 12 was a very big year. Maybe we should start there, or we can start wherever you would like.
Well, to be honest, I would really like to give a big thank you to my daughter, Jasmine May, for first of all introducing us so that I can be a part of this show. And I've seen and heard some of your performances in the past and over the years, and you're very talented.
Thank you.
I feel very blessed to be surrounded by so many talented people in my life, and I just, if I get a chance to contribute to any of that in any way, then my life is absolutely perfect. But yeah, if I can take you back to the beginning when I was 12, I wrote my first story. I was supposed to be doing my homework, but instead I got out a blank sheet of paper, and I started writing about a very random topic, and I'll never forget it because it was simply my walk to the bus stop. I lived in Palisadro, and I was surrounded by acreage, and one of the properties on the way to the stop had cows, and I can remember carefully reaching through the barbed wire fencing to pet them. So I was just taking in the scenery and surroundings before I was off to school. So for me, writing that one little story about that experience changed me. I was doing something that did not require a grade for me to know that it was done well. In other words, it was satisfying to me as is, and that's where it all began for me.
And I think that's a fascinating story because as a poet myself, I mean, I do enjoy being in nature. When I walk, I'm closer. I mean, obviously, I'm closer to the earth and I see things. And I think that is one thing about poet sensitivity we see often. We're sensitive to what is going on around us, whether it's nature, whether it's conversation, whether it's politics, whatever it might be. So that really is a fascinating 12-year-old way of being in the world. And so did you like school?
I did. I got good grades. That's why I find it so interesting that I went off the page as far as when I'm writing a story, it had nothing to do with the grades. And I was completely fulfilled by that. And I thought I was good. I thought I was so good, in fact, that I put some thought into my name at the time. I mean, if I wrote something significant in the beginning using my maiden name, I was afraid that when I grew up, my name would change and that I would no longer be associated with that one particular piece of work that I did in my youth. I mean, these are the things that I worried about when I was 12.
When you were 12, right?
Yeah, no doubt. So to fix that worry, I started using my first name, Constance, and my middle name, May, because it's the only name that I'm ever given from birth till death. And so I found it appropriate to use that to author my writing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful name, Constance May.
Thank you.
And then it was interesting to me because I know your daughter Jasmine from class, and when she mentioned con artiste, I wasn't quite clear on who that was or the spelling or how
she kept it a secret.
She did. Mm-hmm. And finally she goes, "That's my mother." And I go, "Oh."
And I gave her the same middle name. So she likes to go by Jasmine May, and she does all my photography. And so she has Jasmine May Photography and Design. And so that's something that I was able to pass to her. So I really enjoy that.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about Con Artiste and how the name came about, or is there something else you'd
like to?
Actually,
no, that's a good place to start. My writing took a new course in my mid-20s when I was asked to read, perform some of my work on stage with music. My husband, Wade Craver, is a bassist, and he had this one gig in a coffee house and wanted to add a new element to his performance, and that element turned out to be me. In the beginning, I have to admit, it was a little rough, and I had to readjust my writing to be less poetic and more artistic. Long story short, I came up with a new style and a new performance name. I call it Con Artiste, con being the root word of my name, and artiste, well, we all know what a con is, a deceiver, an artist, a con artist. But that didn't really explain what I wanted to do. So I added an E on the end, and it changed everything. It changed the word artist to artiste, which by definition means a public performer. So that was the beginning of that Con Artiste.
And that is really, really fascinating. And I, too, really like bass and music with poetry. I mean, and sometimes I do that. There's something about working with a bass player, and usually the bass in my experience is kind of in the back, and you have the lead guitarist out there, but I like the bass right up front.
Not the bassists I know. They are up front, the kind of guys that you would absolutely enjoy listening to, and they have a lot of rhythm, of course, a lot of soul, and I think poems in particular have a lot of rhythm, so
sure,
combining the both of them makes a lot of sense to me now.
And that kind of makes me think about the poet and the song lyricist, because sometimes we think about poetry simply being words on the page, and to take those words off the page and to have that music and poetry. I mean, I think about how the words move on the page, and if I do it with music, I have to be very aware of that, how those poems word and they lift off the page, and I just think it's very beautiful.
They do come alive, so it's very interesting.
And also, I just wanted to ask you one more thing about your being 12, because you wrote your first story, you're walking to the bus stop, but you also meet your husband-to-be when you're 12. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Oh, my.
And it's funny, because at that very same bus stop, he used to ride his bike by. And he used to, you know, he was so cool about it. Hey, Connie. What's up, Wade? Years later, I find out that he actually added another 3-mile trek to his morning bike ride just to go by that bus stop just to see me. Before school, we're seeing each other in class, but at the same time, he's still taking the extra route to drive by and say hello.
So I think being 12 for you was just an amazing time with your writing and your creativity.
Yes.
And not knowing it, but meeting your husband. Well, maybe you did know it. I don't know.
I didn't know it, but he was my best friend. He was the person I wanted to spend the most time with. And so it's just like that to this day.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So are we going to hear a piece from you now?
I am going to recite something for you. So basically with the Con Artiste, I went from being this quiet, shy writer into someone who can stand on stage and perform my writing. So if I may, I'd like to perform for you a piece that I call Take It to the Page. It describes why I write at all. Simply put, I just want to be heard. So it's just me, no music, because this style of performance can be done with or without it.
Yes.
And so here we go.
Okay.
Second. I never found that clever way to make sense when I speak up. I get confused, but the words are still stretching and getting out. It's just a thought, a feeling, a phrase. Don't be so amazed if it doesn't coincide with something that you call true. That world's for you. Step into mine. It's called my sublime personal view. I talk more in my head than I do out loud. I prefer to get it all out, without interruption, without repercussion for what I just had to say. Because where I come from, opinions are never wrong or right. It's that little guy that fights back when it gets all tied up inside. And when all else fails, I have it out with just me, myself, and the page. to engage my own device. And I have to say, it's the best way that I ever found to get to hit with so many words that nothing in the world can bring me down, because I finally hear the sound of my own voice. And it's about bigger and better things. I want worldwide criticism before I consider my wrong, because in my defense, I was never good at backing down. So I have the scrap of paper that I found and I talk to it. But not the way that I do with people. I'm not on some freaked out emotional limb just trying to get a word in before I'm cut to size. I realize that I cannot change the mind. But here's a piece of mine. It's a gift from me to you. The receipt's in the bag in case these words don't work out for you. They may not be your size, your color, or your kind. But I had to get you something to make up for all the nothing I ever did to you. I'm not a pond. I'm the ocean. I'm full of life and emotion, and sometimes I just stand in my commotion and wait for the tides to recede. I cherish the words that you say and admire the way they come so easy for you, and I'm trying to keep up, but I'm on the verge of giving up again the way that I do when nothing I say belongs to the world according to who cares. That's why I need another tree to cut and give more paper for me so I can see if I'm capable of making any sense at all. Because even as I ride the wave of ego trips and get sucked away in the riptide of this thought, at least I flow. And I'm curious to know how much it'll take for me to seek and then pursue my own unique mind and body without being minded at all. Now, I've been told that when I die, the world will be the same, and all my heart cannot change the way that it is. But words are definitive. They seem to stick around. And I'm pretty good at making myself outlast, even me, because I take it to the page. And still, I may not be forever, but at least I have the power to be clever enough to last.
Oh, I really like that.
Thank you.
Does it take you very long to write a piece like that? And it,
I guess it just depends, you know. Mm-hmm. You know what writing's like. Sometimes
I do,
it
I
just
do.
Flows like uh-huh. water, uh-huh. and sometimes you're hung up on it because you want an idea to come out so bad mm-hmm. that you really will commit yourself to the time it takes to make sure that comes out just right.
And I think it's also very interesting, you know, in a certain kind of way, the transformation process, because you're saying that you were shy. Are you still shy?
Yes.
Okay. That you were or are shy. And so writing has helped you, you know, be heard. And before we continue on, I'm just going to tell the audience, in case they just tuned in, who we are and where we are. And so I'm Pamela Spoda, host of Late Night Poetry Jam. This is KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain, Bella Vista. And I'm in the studio here with Con Artiste, and a spoken word artist, and her husband is a bass player, and they put words to music as well as working with other musicians. And she does all kinds of things besides spoken word. So we're going to explore this more. But can we talk about this poem just a little bit more, and then you're going to do a piece with music?
Yes.
Okay. So I think it's really fascinating, some of the ideas. And I don't know, how do you feel about people talking about your work? Is that a good thing, or it is what it is?
It's just rare.
Oh, it's rare. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm the kind of person that steps up on stage and where'd she come from? What's this about? Where'd she go after I'm gone?
So one of the lines that I mean, all of that was wonderful. One of the lines that stood out for me is that, you know, our bodies, our physical bodies, I mean, we grow old, we die, or we die before we grow old, or whatever the case may be. But that words stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that, take it to the page, is being able to express yourself. But also that those words may linger, may stay on
for a very long time.
For that possibility.
If possible, yes.
For a very long time. So lovely. Okay. Well, let's hear another piece.
Well,
and are you going to talk about it a little bit?
Just besides performing, I became involved in recording, because there I was with nearly unlimited resources in terms of original music, mm-hmm. combined with the words that I wanted to put with it. So I would like to play for you a recording from way back in the beginning. It's just bass, Wade Craver. And the words that I wrote, it's called Coyote, and it's truly the first piece that I wrote with the intention of it being a performance piece. My first con artiste writing, so to speak. So here it goes.
Ooh.
Not every coyote survives.
but I have mastered defeat to remind myself that I'm dying to come home to me. And because I'm Coyote, I do what I want. I have stolen, lied, scrutinized, criticized, and patrolled your intentions on me. It's all in a day. It's all in my nature. The one that knows too many of you. You know who you are. You invade my space. Long before you knew who I was. I am Coyote. I'm cursed with watchful eyes. And pursuing your weakness because I cannot resist to charm you first and then scare you away. Because I am Coyote, and I created a craft. A clever, sacred, self-righteous path. It's what I call instinct. It's what I do best. And it's one of the many reasons I'm dead. Because I'm always on guard and always in battle, doing what it takes to be me. And I already knew all about you before you suspected me. And before you can think of one simple revenge, I have stolen your plans while you slept and dreamt, dreaming of ways to undermine me, because nobody likes Coyote. And those who do like me know me the least. They think that I'm cute. They think I'm a pet. It's a kind of routine that I have to reject. Because during my life, I'm complete overall. I crawl to no one. I don't sit on my ass, waiting to feast. I live to tackle my prey. No coyote I know ever died at the foot of your door. Because being Coyote is to die on your feet. I died in the wild, not pathetic, not weak. I died of my own freak accident deaths, not starved for something from you. Don't even pretend to come close to my den. Because even in death, I can still hear you breathe. And that's the difference between you and me. You never could see the savage in me. Because it hides in tight clothes and the style of my mane. I hide in my smile and I hide when I'm vain. Pathetic it seems, but I learned this from you. I know what you like. And I know how to get you to notice me. I just do it to get you to like me. And I did it because if I didn't, you wouldn't have bothered to speak with me. Don't think that I died because you don't care. It happened so that I wouldn't be weak. Weak from the need to be regarded by you. And when you're Coyote, you'll understand too. That nobody likes Coyote. The reason? With me, you cannot deny that I fight hard not wither away before I happen to die. This Coyote wasn't pushed to the ground. I tripped on my own swift feet. And if you dare laugh at Coyote, I'll return to supply your defeat.
So yeah, you can see that I'm starting to get a feel for what I'm doing as a performer.
It's wonderful. I want to say I love that piece.
Do you?
I love that piece. That bass player, your husband, is great. I mean, that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the way it's put together and what you're saying is wonderful.
Thank
you. So I hadn't heard that, and so I was just listening to it going, oh, how good is that?
So that was me taking it off the page. First, right. I'm taking it to the page. Now right. I'm bringing my words off the page into a more performance art.
So is Coyote a central figure in your work or in some of your pieces? Or do you want to talk a little There are some really interesting lines in that poem about Coyote, but maybe we could just you could tell us a little bit about Coyote.
Well, of course, there's the Wile E. Coyote from the cartoons when I was growing up. He never quit. I mean, he practically died every single show, and yet the very next day he's bringing in the Acme products and he's trying again. So I like the persistence that he had, and I have a feeling that being that persistent is what it takes to survive or to make your way in this world at all.
Yes, I mean, there's a real power in that piece, and there's humor, but there's also, it's kind of, it's almost a challenge. I mean, that's kind of what I'm feeling, that I'm not going to sit on my ass. And if you do this, if you laugh at Coyote, you know, I'm going to come back.
Well, I try to bring in the people by saying, and when you're Coyote, you'll understand too, because I think a lot of us have to feel that way in order to sort of be pushed into the back. Into the corner, and then fight our way out, you know.
And Coyote is a central figure in many Native American sacred traditions as the trickster. You never quite know.
And I do happen to be part Chickasaw, so.
Are you?
Yeah, a little tiny sliver.
Oh, my. Well, that is just... I'm just delighted. That is really beautiful. I mean, truly, that was beautiful. And so... I was thinking about talking a little bit about your studio, but we're also going to talk about books that you're working on. Because you said that you had access to these wonderful musicians. So you have you do everything at your house, and you have a room with a computer studio, and you mainly have bass players and other musicians that come by or that have come by. And so you record them, you do spoken word with the pieces.
Correct.
And so do you and your husband, I'm just curious in terms of the writing process. I mean, do you sit down and like that piece, like hammer out each piece, or he has his music, you have your words, and you just
honestly the musicians provide whatever it is they wish to provide.
Uh-huh.
Period.
Uh-huh.
And then my part is just fitting with what they do. Uh-huh.
Because he had a lot of staccato in that bass piece and stops and then
that piece in particular I asked for though because he knew that we had already performed Coyote with a full band and I said, you know, I just want the bass line. So this was years ago. I said, can you just play the bass line for me? And I recorded that, and that's how that one turned out.
I see. It's just. Well, I just want to say again, I keep saying this, I'm being redundant. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
So we're going to go into your writing of several books.
Yes.
Okay, so maybe you could just start telling us a little bit about that.
Well, most of this stuff can be found online, conartiste.com. But the very first book that I ever wrote, I was in my early 20s. I call it Working on Reality. And to be honest, I basically folded and stapled this book into place. It was a handmade book. I just wanted to get it in my hand so that I can prove I can be a writer, you know, because all you really had to do was make it a reality. And at the time, you know, I'm in a dead-end job. I felt sort of unsuccessful, but at the same time, I was extremely fulfilled, you know, and I couldn't figure out what I was going for. So this is called Working on Reality, and I decided that maybe I wasn't feeling successful because I wasn't actually working on changing my reality.
Well, let me ask you a question. So you're going to read to us some parts from the book.
Exactly.
About this very thing.
Yes.
Okay.
So the intro sort of begins with, my hopes and dreams depend upon my writing. Someday I wish to make a career through the publication of my work. It all starts here, grabbing every spare moment that I can between work shifts and bottle feedings. What kind of example am I setting for my daughter if I tell her to follow her dreams and then not pursue my own? So she was a real inspiration for me. Having her was telling me that, you know, life is going by, and what about my life, and how do I set an example for her life?
Well, can I just ask you
absolutely
a question right now? So at 12, you're writing your first story, and you meet your husband-to-be.
Yeah.
And then in your 20s, you marry your husband. Well, your husband. Now he becomes your husband. And then you have your daughter, Jasmine.
Yes.
And then for a period of time, 10 months or so, you're not writing or working on
I would call it more like a year or two.
Uh-huh,
you know,
year
I
two,
really uh-huh. dived into full-time work, marriage.
Right.
Having a kid.
Right.
And I don't know if you know anything about that, but it's a very time consuming life change.
Right.
And so
And so this comes out of
that change.
That change, that time. Okay.
So it starts off in chapter one. I'm basically sunbathing, and I begin to meditate. And, you know, so I detach myself from this body to swim in the warm light. And I'm trying to figure out what it is that I'm feeling and why I'm feeling so unfulfilled. And I decide that most of my adolescence was spent training for a future that still eludes me. I was constantly influenced by the idea that I was going to grow up and be somebody. This conditioning took years to achieve by my teachers and mentors that were relentless in their pursuit to mold my aspirations and intellect. This constant force grew to instill in me that I must surely want to be successful when I grow up, because of course, what is there to want? I spent my entire life believing that there was only one possible road, only I have failed to travel it. And then I go on to say, this lack of success, which seemed so easy to obtain in my youth, has left a void in my confidence. My peaceful surroundings have managed to fill this emptiness, and yet through meditation, this void ominously lurks, revealing to me that only through the abandonment of my former training will I begin to contribute to my inner growth, that peace in my soul who still longs for success. And then I sort of just conclude that I simply grew to be a different person than I was in my youth. The baggage that I carry now is the hopes and dreams of another person. Throughout all of my previous struggles to obtain a level of success, I was never rewarded. Happiness is my reward now, despite school, because I no longer needed it to fulfill me. I do not deny myself the opportunity to obtain more knowledge. I simply have confidence that I can do it on my own, a form of self-education.
And I think that in your bio, you mentioned this, that you like working alone. On one level, you're working alone, but yet you're also working with a musician or music. And so you're also talking about the educational process, that you can do your own reading and research and understanding and
yeah,
writing.
These days, there really is no excuse for not obtaining the knowledge
that you want or that you need. And let me remind the audience that we're here with Con Artiste, spoken word poet and writer and recorder and also YouTube video maker. We're at KKRN. I'm Pamela Spoto. This is Late Night Poetry Jam. So then as we continue here, well, I was thinking about what you were saying about, you know, wanting to publish, you know, what is my future going to be like? And so if I go to your webpage, I mean, that's beautiful too. And you have spoken word pieces that we would say are published, you know, they're published there. People can listen to them.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. There's a few pieces online. A lot of my recordings I would call being in my archives right now.
Uh-huh.
They're not always out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe people hear me the most if I'm performing somewhere.
Right. And do you do that every so often?
Every so often.
At a coffee house or something like that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, cool. Very cool. And when you do that, do you normally perform with your husband or do you?
Yes, normally. One time I had a gig at the Traveling Bohemian Art Loft.
Right. Yes.
And I got together all kinds of musicians.
Oh.
So there was a whole bunch of them, and they were all lined up, and each of us had pieces that we mm-hmm. did together,
mm-hmm.
and one of them that we all did at the same time. So that was a really fantastic experience for me.
That's lovely, and that's a wonderful venue, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small space, but it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it just feels so...
It does.
...so creative and beautiful, and Nadia does a lot to make that
yeah,
way.
They're good people.
So So that is one book that you were working on. Now, is Coyote's Digest, is this a poem or is this a book?
Yes, it's a collection of poems and short stories at the
uh-huh.
time.
Uh-huh.
So I just kept on writing. You know, it wasn't just about the book. It wasn't about just spoken word pieces. I was constantly writing in my journals and I wanted to publish them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
this was called Coyote's Digest. And when I was a kid, my grandmother was very much aware of the fact that I wanted to be a writer. In fact, she would buy me a thesaurus or a dictionary for Christmas instead of toys and games. And I loved her for that. She used to tell me to submit a story to Reader's Digest because that was her thing at the time. So I called this book Coyote's Digest because it reminds me of her love and support.
isn't it interesting what parents or others in our lives, you know, so instead of getting the toy, you get a book, you get a dictionary, you get a thesaurus.
Have a picture of me holding up a thesaurus at Christmas time, and I just love that photo. And everyone else is getting skis, and, you know, of course, I'm getting some nice stuff, too, but that in particular, I went through it so many times, because it gives you such an array of words.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And we can expand and utilize those those ideas through words.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to, at this point, are you going to perform another piece?
Or actually, I'm going to read a little bit from Coyote's Digest, if I may.
Oh, certainly. We'd like to hear that. And then we're going to hear a piece.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
Good. Okay, good.
So, I'm hiding under the blankets with a flashlight, reading a book. I used to do this every night, hide under the blanket with a flashlight. My parents would tell me to go to sleep, but I needed a light to see. Go to sleep, they'd say. I am, I'd lie and turn out the light. Nothing's changed. I'm all grown up and I'm hiding again, hiding my passion for a good book, waiting for freedom in the night to read forever with no distractions. I always felt guilty about the time that I spent with my books. I put them down to live all day. I put them down to sleep all night. I wouldn't exist without my flashlight. And that's absolutely true. I spent so much time with books when I was a child. It literally looked like I was doing nothing, you know?
But the flashlight, that's an interesting symbol. I mean, literally, it is the flashlight that lights the page, but the light that's beaming on whatever it is, the truth, what we want to learn, the education, so it can really...
And even as an adult, life gets in the way. And I still feel guilty about the time I spend with books. I really should be doing yard work or, you know, making money or doing something different at that particular moment. But
do you have a preference for writing, let's say, prose in books versus doing the spoken word and music? Or they're just different genres, but they are...
They're probably different genres. I have to say that if I were to pick... I'm leaning towards a con artiste.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's going to be something that I want to pursue for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because it involves music. Mm-hmm. It involves performance. It involves me coming out of my skin and doing something that maybe frightens me in the moment and, you know, makes me feel alive.
And let me ask you one more question about that. Are you still, and I think I asked you this, do you still feel shy when you're performing, or are you just lost in your creativity at the moment?
Well, having stuff memorized helps me a lot, you know, so I get to get it out there in a way that almost makes it to where I can stand beside myself and watch it happen. But, you know, and then I jump back into my own self and make sure that the audience appreciates where it's coming from, because they are the people who I'm trying to impress.
Yes, and that I had forgotten for a moment that, see, I don't memorize. I can't memorize. I'd like to memorize. I have to read my stuff. It's a terrible thing. No,
no, it's not.
that's what I do. But it's so interesting that you, that's why I have this written down. The audience can't see this, but that you have memorized 25 to 30 pieces.
Yes. I mean, they're not all gems. But they're memorized, and I have my favorites, of course, which I'd like to perform for you today.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I mean, they really are committed to memory. It takes time. I have to write them. I have to read them. I have to go over them again and again. But once they're committed to memory, they're pretty much stuck there.
That is great. And so for the audience, too, take it to the page. Con Artiste is sitting here with her eyes closed, doing her poetry.
Yes.
So it's memorized. She's not reading this off the page, her music pieces. So now, did you want to read us anything else from that?
Let me jump to one last thing if I can.
Okay, certainly.
So this is from Coyote's Digesto.
Yes.
I'm afraid of losing my edge, of settling in too deep. It's so easy to be content. I need a healthy dose of I'm sorry, can I redo that?
Sure.
I'm afraid of losing my edge, of settling in too deep. It's so easy to be content. I need a healthy dose of difficulty to get me by. I'm used to being high on that. It never wears me out. Idleness does. It makes me fat. It makes my skin pale. It makes me want to quit. Who the heck cares if Con Artiste is legit? I do. So, yeah, you can see that I'm just constantly testing myself and trying to give myself the confidence. And am I doing it for myself? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that last line that you read, so as long as you care, that is what is important.
Mm-hmm. That is a driving force.
Yes, yes. So does that bring us to another performance piece?
Actually, yeah, this comes from a book that I call Creature Comforts. I won't be reading anything from it. I will just perform for you a piece from it that I converted into a spoken word. The music that I will be playing is from keyboardist Cleveland Bonet. He's local. Mm-hmm. A lot of musicians like to contribute to my work, and I'm very thankful for that. And so here we go. My mistakes overwhelm me. Even if it was something that I messed up on years ago, it haunts me with waves of cold air on the hair of my skin. Until my head begins to crawl from the inside out, I try to hold it together, but it's hopeless. No matter what I do, I'm nothing but a fool who's trying to fool you into thinking that I'm special when nobody's perfect, even if we expect it from others. That's why we have a list of lies, a list of goodbyes to tide us over, undisturbed multitudes of silence that nobody dares to understand. Who are we trying to impress? Impersonations are those dark corridors that each of us permits ourselves to walk down, still thinking that we'll be okay. But it's hard to look forward to anything in the dark. I hold myself and lie to me, to you. Creature Comforts, another lie. Living never comforts me. All that reckless abandonment of your true nature while the creature is dying inside, with every humanistic trait that we gain, in every way, we pay for laughter. But I don't hear laughter in the wild. I see fear in survival. Creatures taking care of business. But you can't be wild, not in the true sense of the word. You must have fun or be horribly harassed, pointed at and laughed at. But the minute participation begins, all functioning ends, until you find yourself making mistakes that were pushed upon you by those you trusted, pushing you into the dark without a light. Humans need light. Our eyes are not susceptible to quiet abandonment, even if they really are, but are just not acquainted with the stars, not adjusted to being left behind, lugging around my guilt because I have no dumping grounds, and I definitely don't have you. I'm reminded of this a lot when I wish I had a day away from my thoughts. So I'm growing and knowing that soon, when I look up to see that the moon has faded, then I'll know I live long enough to jade it.
Well, you know, the music and the voice is truly lovely.
Thank you.
And so I got to hear bass and now with keyboard. And
yeah, it works different with every different sort of instrument. Sounds good with guitar, acoustically.
Uh-huh. Would you say you primarily record with bass or?
These days, it really does span out. So, but yeah, primarily that's the beginning. That's the foundation of everything that I've ever done.
Uh-huh,
but, you know, in time, because I've known Wade, he's introduced me to so many different people because mm-hmm. that's how he plays in mm-hmm. bands. Mm-hmm. And then these people come over mm-hmm. and then sometimes I'm recording them. And
right.
sometimes they're just giving me their own work that they recorded themselves, but they want to contribute to what I do.
That is so cool.
I know.
That is really, really cool. So you record primarily with bass. That was a wonderful keyboard piece. Have you recorded with guitar or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I don't know what else to say about that
right,
one.
No,
but
no, I was just curious.
No, I do. And all the different music and genres are pretty much coming into my hands from time to time over the years.
Would you like to say anything about the piece that you just did? Because I think you're going to be doing another piece very, very soon for your husband.
Well, no, I just really, in that book, Creature Comforts, mm-hmm. I wrote that. And so in order to convert it to something that was spoken, I had to delete a couple of words and lines. Because sometimes you have to get it to fit to the piece of music.
Right.
And that's where really the only work that Con Artiste has to do is make sure that it fits with the music.
So so if I understand that correctly, so from your book, some of that transformed into this poetry piece.
Yeah, once in a while they get to do that, and this one did beautifully.
It did. It really did. And I had a sense that it's also about not giving up or abandoning your authenticity, your passion, which we can do in life, because we get kind of wrapped up, and I get kind of wrapped up in terms of image and what somebody thinks. And then I go, well, why do I care what anybody thinks? But you know that still is there. And you know, one a couple of words that stood out for me were like fear and survival, and the wildness mm-hmm. of it. And so, is that pulling to you the wildness of life, the wildness of creatures?
Yeah,
the
somewhere wildness? In the background, I always feel like we're playing and we're having too much fun. You know, life should be more serious.
Uh-huh,
I mean,
uh-huh.
Animals in the wild, they get to have a little bit of fun, but not often. Those creatures are out there working every day to survive.
To survive, to get food, to procreate, mm-hmm. Maybe they're smiling too sometimes.
Oh, maybe, huh?
Trying not to
get that is their fun.
Trying not to get shot and, you know, other things like that. Trying to stay alive. Yes, survival. Exactly. So did you want to move from here into another piece? I know that you did write something. Is it for your husband?
I did. And that was something that originally was on paper.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of committed it to memory. And I can do it to almost any piece. So mm-hmm. I went through my archives last night and I found a bass piece that he did for me a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And so if I can play that part, then I will read the words to it or perform the words to it.
Now, this is a longer piece, and that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to be really excited to hear it. Maybe I should say that once again, that this is Late Night Poetry Jam at KKRN in Round Mountain. And I'm sitting here in the studio with Con Artiste, and I'm Pamela Spoda, host of the show. And we have our engineer, the wonderful Doug Bennett, sitting here too, and he's waving his hand. So without... I was going to say without talking about it, but we can. So did you decide that this is the wonderful man of my life, my husband, and I'm going to write him some poetry?
Well, my husband's the kind of guy that if I try to compliment him, he makes a joke out of it.
Oh,
you know? So in my mind, this is me sitting him down, sort of apologizing for who I am, but at the same time, I'm getting my word in like uh-huh. I always like to do.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So.
Okay.
I call this one Not Everyone Is Good Like That.
Okay.
Okay. I've been meaning to tell you why I feel the need to question everything that you do. It's just hard to believe how you take this tremendous mind and proceed to follow through. With every intention held high for me, you always do your best for me. And not everyone is good like that. You never let me fall and crack right open. This fragile, pathetic me. There's always room for possibility. But every day you prove me wrong about the way you think and turn possibility into a positive thing. Then you give me all the tips that you fail to ever need. You're like a scout with all the clever little tricks of the world, and it's all the info that I need. So I should have known that you don't work that way. You make me always want to stay for one more hour, one more laugh, one more quick guarantee that our hearts are still the same as those days when you couldn't wait to ride your bike a million miles away for a second of my time. And every day I thought back then, there's no way that he'll be back again. But I say that now with a grin because you set out to prove me wrong. And the years have only made you grow stronger in your state of mind. So you're still the same, but things have changed. And I've been meaning to tell you that I can see a higher degree of stress on your face for adding responsibility to your life. but I'm glad I picked your kind. Your responsibility is keeping me alive, to fix and change and make things work. And I admit, it's a perk, but I worry that you won't survive. You're in the bear's cage all the time, fighting for my right to be plain old simple me. So this isn't ridicule, it's observation. You should know this most of all. You're the reason that nothing ever seems to crawl close enough to mess with me. You always do your best for me. And you attack with the force of power itself to seize all threat away. You're like a ninja with sniper-honed skills. And here, I think that I'm doing okay, that I fight well on my own, because not everyone is good like that. You never let me fall and crack right open. My simple plea, to make room for possibility. You're just crazy for me like that. And I appreciate your drive, your smile, your overall style, and especially your point of view. Because when it's time to buckle down, I always think of you. What would he do to get this done? Then I proceed in a way that I learned from watching the best of the best maintain. But I have to admit, it's not easy to gain complete control over this underdeveloped brain. I've got this constant ache that's clogging it up, and I've been meaning to tell you that you make me used to feeling safe. But now, I'm stuck with needing to feel that way forever. But forever is a long time. And I've seen my own kind loved and hate, so I wait for that or death to take it all away. But until then, I need something that keeps me from dealing with the world outside. And I expect you to provide it, on demand sometimes. I'm shaking your world to collide with the possibility that I can't do this alone. But I need to take my place in this world to embrace a more dominant side. And I confess that I can definitely use someone like you to be my ultimate guide through it all. Because I can't do much on my own, not yet. So I put a lot of pressure on you to always follow through with every intention held high for me. To always do your best for me. Because not everyone is good like that. But I'm keeping up to watch your back this time, like a Jedi Knight in training. Because I don't want to be the one that wasn't strong enough to pass this test. I'm better than I used to be. Because your life has given me a window of opportunity. And I won't let you down.
I just want to tell our audience that Con Artiste sat here for approximately 7 minutes with her eyes closed at the mic, just saying those wonderful words to the music, celebrating her husband, and that was absolutely lovely.
Thank you.
And there were some lines here that were just, they're just incredibly incredible. And I saw how you would take a line and then, or an idea, and then reword it in a way. I mean, so there's this theme that kind of runs through it. Not everything is good like that, that mm-hmm. line, or, and then kind of changing that up a little bit as it goes along. And it's just very nice how you weave that in and out. Did you want to say anything more about this poem? I mean, it really truly is. When did you write this? It's a celebration of love.
I think it's actually part of my Coyote's Digest book. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It would have been quite a while ago. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I remember opening up my book to that page and having him read it, and he was touched by it.
Uh-huh.
So over the years, I graduated it into a performance piece. Mm-hmm. So.
When you performed at the Loft, did you do this piece?
No, I don't think I did. But if I can just move ahead, one of my passions is old, out of copyright books. You know, so when I got my hands on this 1891 Webster's Dictionary, the first thing that I looked up was con artiste.
Uh-huh.
And what's funny about that is con is a completely different definition in the old dictionary. It's not a deceiver. A con is to know, to be able, to be skillful or wise, to bear or to bring forth. But my favorite is to fix in the mind or to commit to memory. So like to con a lesson. Artiste means one who is peculiarly, well, one who is dexterous and tasteful in the art of something. So in this case, in the art of being a con. So in 1891, the definition of con artiste might be someone who is dexterous and tasteful in the art of knowing or bringing forth what is fixed in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, maybe that would be a better way to define it than con artiste today, the mm-hmm. deceiver, the artist, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the public performer. Mm-hmm. So because I have a passion for old words, I was hoping that maybe I can end this program with the oldest document in our history, and that would be the Declaration of Independence. I conned it, minus 472 words. And so it's called Human Events. And the music for this I recorded with Michael Manring. He came mm-hmm. to our studio, and he played this piece for everybody. It was a master class. And so this program will be the only time you're going to hear this version of it. I'm not going to put it on the website or anything. It'll be at kkrn.org.
Cool.
So.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. And to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. The history is a history of repeated injuries, all having absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. Refused assent to laws for the public good. Forbidding governors to pass laws till assent be obtained, and has neglected to attend them. Refused to pass laws for large districts of people, unless those people relinquish the right of representation. Has called together legislative bodies at places distant from their public for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance. Has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing his invasions on the rights of the people. Has refused to cause others to be elected. Has endeavored to prevent the population of these states obstructing the naturalization of foreigners, has obstructed justice, refusing his assent to laws establishing judiciary powers, has made judges dependent on his will alone for their offices and their salaries, has erected new offices, sent swarms of officers to harass our people, has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without consent, has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power, has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts, for quartering armed troops among us, for protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system, introducing absolute rule, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for declaring themselves with power for us in all cases whatsoever, declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us, has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people, transporting armies to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny with cruelty totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation, has constrained our fellow citizens to bear arms against their country, to become executioners of their friends, or to fall themselves by their hands, has excited domestic insurrections amongst us to bring on the savages. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A character is marked by every act which defines a tyrant as unfit to be the ruler of a free people. We have warned them. We have reminded them. We have appealed to their native justice. And we have to disavow these usurpations, which inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They have been deaf to the voice of justice, and we must hold them as we hold the rest of mankind. Enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, the representatives, appealing to the supreme judge of the world of our intentions, and by the authority of the good people, solemnly publish and declare that these are and ought to be free and independent states, and have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other things which independent states may do, and with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Thank you so much, Constance.
Thank you, Pamela. This was a blast.
And you were wonderful, and I'm so glad that you were with us.
This is even better than I imagined.
Oh, good. It was better, Doug.
Way better.
So this is KKRN, and this is Late Night Poetry Jam. I'm Pamela Spoto in the studio with Doug Bennett and Constance May, and thank you again for being here.
I do appreciate it. Thank you so much.